Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio.
Well, welcome to the latest Indie Prime podcast, and my guest today on this special day after the EU election results is Paul Kavanagh, better known as Wee Ginger Dog.
Well, you've actually got the Wee Ginger Duggers down there lying below us.
Yeah, so if you hear any footsteps, it's probably Ginger walking around.
But he's quite happy here because Ray's his foster daddy.
Oh, I wasn't letting that on.
Well, there you go.
There's that secret.
There's that secret.
The secret's out. So,
yeah, Ray very kindly looks after Ginger when I go away. So Ray and his wife, Sandra, very kindly look after Ginger when I go away. So,
oh, and so it's a pleasure.
The dog is quite happy to be here.
Yeah. So. Oh, he loves it.
So if you hear any clacking about, that's the dog's paws on the on the floor.
Right. Paul, what's your thoughts on last night?
Well, it was a good result. Three MEPs is an excellent result for the SNP. They came first in every single Scottish constituency, every single local authority area. Except Shetland and Orkney. And in Shetland and Orkney, they were only a few hundred votes behind the Lib Dems, so they've made substantial gains in every part of the country. The Labour and Conservative vote collapsed, and I think we can now safely say it's past peak Ruth.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I think the kind of whole Ruth Davidson for First Minister thing is, we shouldn't be hearing much more of that.
No, I think that violin's been put away in the case.
Yeah, a very, very small one.
Aye, because when you look at the votes in the Shetlands and Orkney, though Lib Dems were ahead, their votes actually slipped back by about 4 or 5%, whereas SNP vote was up 8%.
Yeah.
So that's a healthy move in the right direction.
But I totaled up the votes for various different parties in Scotland. I mean, the vote in England was kind of, it was very much a cure its egg in England and Wales. You couldn't really, both opponents of Brexit and supporters of Brexit could point to those results as saying it was in our favour because there was a surge in support for the Lib Dems. There was equally that massive vote for the Brexit party, for Nigel Farage's opportunism party, as I like to call it. And but you couldn't really say equivocally one way or another what we England and Wales were wanting to vote. It was that they remain as divided as ever. In Scotland, the picture is very, very different. Scotland gave a clear and unequivocal message in that election. 62% of the Scottish electorate have voted for either the SNP, the Lib Dems, the Greens or Change UK, all of which are parties which want a second EU referendum. And 62% of Scottish voters have clearly backed parties in favour of a second EU referendum. Only 28% of Scottish voters, 14.5% or whatever it was for the Brexit party, and somewhat less than that for, I think it was 12% for the Tories, and then it was about 1.5% for the rump of UKIP, want Brexit. So Scotland is very, very clearly opposed to Brexit. That's what this result tells us. So I think now we're in a position where if Scotland is taken out of the European Union, the Conservatives are already saying down south that, oh, this result's saying that, you know, that we have to get on delivering Brexit. Scotland is saying, well, you know, we want a vote. We want a vote on our future. And the case for a Scottish independence referendum, I think, is now unanswerable.
Absolutely. Because Ian Blackford has basically said, though it's not been a vote for independence, it's given a very strong indication of how the nation of Scotland has a totally different outlook.
The question, I think, is going to be for those people who backed parties in favour of a second EU referendum in Scotland, but not parties in favour of a Scottish independence referendum, specifically the Lib Dems and Change UK, and where what their opinion is going to be on should Scotland still have the right to decide its own future if we are indeed taken out of the EU without a referendum.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Tories, I think, are definitely going to try and use these results to double down on... They've been panicked. They've lost a significant vote to, you know, the right-wing populism of Nigel Farage. They want to get that back. And they're going to try and out Farage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're now in a position where it's far more likely. I mean, it was already pretty likely, but it's now far more likely that the Tories are going to pick someone who is a hardline Brexiter for the next Conservative leader. I think Boris Johnson's chances of becoming Tory leader, they were already pretty good. I think they're now better than they were before, because I think that a lot of Conservative MPs will be making the calculation that he's the only one who's got the sufficient populist clout, even though that sounds ridiculous to say that in a Scottish context, but a sufficient populist clout, certainly with the electorate in England, in order to challenge Nigel Farage.
And it's something that Alistair Campbell mentioned today, that, you know, is this democracy where 110,000 Conservative Party members get to choose the Prime Minister of the UK?
And not
60 million.
A lot of those people wouldn't even have voted Tory at that last election.
Uh-huh. Well, Campbell himself admitted he voted Lib Dem.
No, I mean the Conservative Party members.
Uh-huh.
The Conservative Party members who are electing the next Conservative leader,
yeah,
a big chunk of those people will not have voted Tory.
Yep.
They'll have voted for the Brexit Party.
What a mess. What chaos.
I know. So how's that stability of the United Kingdom working out for
Strong
you?
Strong and stable.
It's just a farce. Yeah. It really is just a farce.
So what route do you think Westminster will take when they absorb this result and the treatment of Scotland?
Well, Scotland's going to be ignored anyway. I think that's the one safe bet, you know, that Scotland won't really figure in their calculations. What I do wonder is that, you know, since the Conservative Party is going to tack even further to the right, to appease the kind of English nationalist, you know, Brexit voter, I suspect that some conservative leaders might be willing to sacrifice Scotland in pursuit of Brexit.
Yep.
If that's what it takes for them to get Brexit, if it's a choice between, you know, the United Kingdom or Brexit, if it's a choice between keeping Scotland in the UK or Brexit, they'll go for Brexit. You know, and that's good for us, but it's pretty bad for England.
It is.
You know.
Because I've always felt independence for Scotland would actually have a knock-on effect of being beneficial to England.
In particular,
the north of England, where I originate from, that we suffered so much from the wealth being drained from the north of England, whether the northeast or the northwest, down to the southeast.
Well, there's just structural problems with the entire UK, the way that the entire UK is organised. You know, it's basically a huge big money vacuum, and money and resources all get sucked towards the southeast. You know, the difference is that Scotland has some kind of institutions and a national identity that's able to act as a bulwark against that, whereas the north of England doesn't.
So
I mean, the north of England gets treated even worse than Scotland in a lot of respects when you look at things like the investment and transport infrastructure, for example. Scotland does worse than London. Everywhere does worse than London.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't do as badly as the north of England.
Yeah.
You know, because we are protected by an extent by the Barnett formula. And that's something that I think is now under threat with this appeal to English nationalism that the Tories are going to go for. I think that the Barnett formula is seriously under threat. The Tories will say, oh, it's terribly unfair that Scotland gets this extra money, in inverted commas, you know? And why should we be funding Scottish public service? That's what we're going to be hearing from them, you know? And they will attack the Barnett formula. And if they do that, I mean, I've seen some anti-independence commentators, you know, particularly in the Daily Record, saying that, you know, if that happens, if the United Kingdom axes the Barnett formula, there is no longer an economic case for Scotland remaining a part of the United Kingdom.
Exactly. You know? Because I was listening on LBC yesterday, and the conversation was regarding tuition fees, and they were complaining about the amount of debt that students are leaving, and they're not getting enough income to actually cover, making the payments, and the interest rate that they pay is 6.6%.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, well, how about reducing the level of fees for to 7,500? I thought, come to Scotland, you get none. Totally different ball game. Yeah. And then I think, you know, it's. I've mentioned this before, but I'll still say it again. We are so cushioned up here that I feel there's so many residents of Scotland who are not politically in tune, that just don't appreciate well off.
Partly it's because we don't really have a strong Indigenous media in this country.
Yeah.
You know, the Scottish media is essentially a branch of the British media. We get, you know, a lot of the newspapers that dominate the shelves are UK newspapers with some Scottish sports pages.
Because I think it'd be great if someone like, let's say, STV transported, say, half a dozen undecided voters to live in England for 6 months and then brought them back and says, right, have you made up your mind yet? I think that'd be six yes families.
Well, yeah. I mean, they are in, I mean, it's... The health service and the education service in England is in crisis.
Uh-huh.
They're in crisis. I mean, I'm not trying to pretend that everything in Scotland is wonderful and rosy, but you can't separate what's going on in Scotland from the fact that the funding decisions, that you know, the final decision on funding is made by Westminster.
Yeah.
You know, the Scottish government is given a fixed amount of money. You know, it doesn't have the freedom that a national government has, you know, an independent state has, in order to make, you know, borrowing or its own investment decisions. It's limited, it's constrained by the Scotland Act and the limitations that are imposed on it by Westminster and the devolution settlement, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not really a fair comparison to say, oh, you know, what opponents and independents are trying to do is to compare the SNP's running of a devolved administration with an independent Scotland. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's so wrong on so many levels, partly because, you know, Scotland's not an independent country. You can't really compare, you know, the potentials of a devolved government with the potentials of an independent country.
Correct.
But also because you're talking about the policy decisions of an individual party.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about an individual party, because when Scotland becomes independent, it will be a democracy.
Correct.
And if we are foolish enough, we could even vote for Ruth Davidson as First Minister. God forbid.
Yeah.
But theoretically, that's a possibility.
Well,
you know.
Well, that's actually something I mentioned.
It's not going to happen, but, you know.
Well, it's something I mentioned, and one day I'm going to put my speech at the march in Stornoway on. I'll put it on the podcast, but... That's one of the things I said, is that we have to remember that in an independent Scotland, there will still be people with a conservative outlook.
Of course.
A Labour outlook, a Liberal Dem outlook. It's not just going to be SNP and Green. So there's going to be a voice for everyone. So people shouldn't be scared.
Well, I think one of the biggest arguments for Scottish independence is that after independence, you know, Scottish politics will realign.
Uh-huh.
Because the fault lines in Scottish politics at the moment, independence or not,
yeah,
you know, will no longer exist.
Because there's something that you've mentioned that I always liked.
What was that?
That you want your elected MPs to be here because they're going to be closer for you to kick the arse off.
Yeah, because we need to keep, they need to be accountable to us. The problem we've got at the moment, Brexit will be decided by people who are not accountable to the electorate of Scotland.
Yeah.
You know, we are essentially powerless. Even though, you know, yesterday, you know, that result came out and it was a very strong today, rather. That really strong result came out in Scotland. 62% of the people of Scotland won a second EU referendum. They voted for parties that very clearly state that in their manifestos, that they want a second EU referendum. We won't get it because we don't have any effect on the course of Brexit. We've had no effect on the negotiations. We've had no input into the type of Brexit that we're going to get, you know. And essentially the problems of Scotland are caused by the fact that we are essentially powerless to effect our own fate. It strikes me as being utterly ludicrous that countries like Estonia and Malta have more influence over Scotland's destiny right now than Scotland does itself.
Yeah.
Because they have a veto in the European Union. they can say whether or not, aye or no, whether or not the UK gets an extension to Article 50. They can have an input into the Brexit negotiation process in a way that Scotland can't. And they have more influence than we do. Tiny countries, countries with a fraction of the population that Scotland has.
Of countries of hundreds of thousands of the population.
Well, I think there's 1.5 million people in Estonia. There's, I think it's 300,000 in Malta.
Yeah.
There's, I think it's about 600,000, I'm not sure, in Luxembourg. You know, there's 1.5 million or so, and 2 million, I think, in Latvia. Mm-hmm. Another 2 million in Lithuania. All of these countries are much smaller than Scotland is in terms of population, but they have considerably more clout than Scotland does because they are independent members of the European Union.
How would you feel that, because I think...
The other point, by the way, is that the country's the same size as Scotland in the European Union. We were talking about 6 MEPs.
Yeah.
You know, Scotland elected 6 MEPs yesterday. We've got 5 million people, 5.5 million people, whatever, in Scotland. Our population size is the same as Denmark's and the same as Finland's. They've also got just over 5 million people each. They have 13 MEPs each.
Wow, more than double the voice.
More than double what we've got.
More than double the voice for their country.
Yep. So there's a UK benefit for you right there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We keep on coming up. We did in 2014 with all these reasons why Scotland should be has the ability to be a sound, progressive, independent country. But we're still not addressing the concerns of people regarding that divergence insofar as that. A lot of people concerned, well, oh, what's going to be the future relationship with England? And I keep on saying, well, at the end of the day, all we're doing is having a diversion regarding the politics. Really? That we have a different, we've got a different outlook, and that's been proven election after election.
Certainly proven today with the EU election.
But how do you feel if you were talking to a undecided or no voter who's, oh, I'm so strong with this relationship with England, I don't want us to lose it. How would you get over that?
Yeah, but there's a difference between having a close relationship with a neighbouring country and allowing that neighbouring country to decide your own country's fate.
True.
You know, and that's where we are at the moment. I mean, it's a simple fact of demographics. England has vastly more population than Scotland does. England is, all by itself, England is 85% of the population of the United Kingdom. A UK Prime Minister has to take into account what England wants, because that's 85% of the population. And that works fine as long as Scotland and England want the same things. And for most of the 20th century, they did. Mm-hmm. You know, for most of the 20th century, Scotland and England both alternated voting Labour and voting Tory. And most of the time, or often enough, Scotland got what it voted for because it was on the same page as England. But Brexit has blown that out of the water. We're now seeing that what Scotland wants and what England wants are two completely different things, and they're not reconcilable anymore. So we're now in a position where we have to say, well, we need to say either we decide our own future or we allow England to decide it for us. And personally, I think that we need to decide our own future, because then we can build a constructive relationship with England. Because if we don't, and we allow England to impose its will upon us the way it's happening because of the nature of the United Kingdom, then that will breed resentment, that will breed dislike and distrust, and a sullen and resentful population in Scotland. And that will damage our relationship with our closest neighbour.
Yeah.
And that's really bad for Scotland, and it's really bad for England.
Yeah.
So if we want a healthy adult relationship with England, with the other nations on these islands, we have to do it from a position of equality. Because right now we're not in that position of equality. Right now we're in a subordinate position where Scotland is dictated to by the electoral needs of a much, much larger country. And there is nothing within the framework. This is something I pointed out a while ago. If you want to say, if you want to argue that the United Kingdom really is a union, then tell me what structures exist within this United Kingdom to protect Scotland from English nationalism. And there aren't any.
No.
There are none.
No.
You know? There's nothing, there are no constitutional blocks that Scotland can enforce. There are no constitutional protections that Scotland can appeal to. Scotland gets what England tells it to because England is so much bigger than Scotland is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a simple fact of demographics. Mm-hmm. So if we want our voice to be heard, we can only do it from a position of equality. I mean, it's very obvious, you know, that the way that the difference in treatment between the difference in standing between Scotland and Ireland, you know, in the Brexit negotiations, you know, Scotland has been ignored, it's been sidelined, it's been silenced, it's been told to shut up, it's been told, well, you know, you didn't vote, really, it was a UK-wide vote, and because England is, you know, 85% of the population, we have to do what England wants, you know, whereas Ireland, you know, it really is a member of a family of nations.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's got another, you know, it's got the 27, it's got the other 26 EU member states on its side.
Yeah.
You know, making sure that Irish needs and Irish interests are respected. Who's doing that for Scotland?
Nobody.
It sure as hell isn't the British government.
Nobody down there.
You
know, no. Because I keep on looking back. I'll never forget it. It's imprinted in me. It's after the 2014 referendum. Then we had the Smith Commission.
Right.
And all the parties came together and they went in an agreement, but then that went through for the Scotland Act. And I will never forget the fact, it's not just the fact that Cameron came out and called out evil,
Right. Okay,
English votes for English laws, but it was the fact that over 100 amendments to improve the Scotland Act, which is it's when it's in that process of the discussion, you have an agreement of what goes through. But the fine print, the dotting of the I's and the crossing of the T's is what's agreed and passed in Parliament. And over 100 amendments by the SNP were totally and utterly rejected.
That's right, not one.
That would have made running Scotland so much better.
Yeah. But, I mean, the key promises that they made to us in 2014, I mean, one of the most important, there was a couple of very important promises. There was the obvious one about the only way that we can remain a part of the European Union. You know, is to vote against independence. Now, that's obviously where we saw what happened there. But the other one was that the promise that they made that it would be enshrined in legislation that no changes could be made to the devolution settlement without the express consent of the Scottish Parliament.
Yeah.
Because after all, the devolution settlement is founded upon a referendum. Is founded upon a referendum in 1997 when the people of Scotland overwhelmingly voted for devolution. And that's the democratic legitimacy of the devolution settlement in Scotland. And again, you could argue that that was reinforced in 2014 because it was a conditional vote against independence. We weren't voting. We were told in the final days that there is no status quo. You're voting for safer, faster, better devolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were told that. And they said that, we're going to enshrine this in law, that no changes can be made to the powers of the Scottish Parliament, no changes can be made to the devolution settlement without the express consent of the Scottish Parliament and the people of Scotland. And they just ripped that up. You know, they put it into law and then they went to court to prove that it was meaningless. And the UK Supreme Court said, it is meaningless, it doesn't mean anything at all, the UK government can do whatever the hell it wants. And then they went ahead and, you know, undermined the devolution settlement in a way that was really appallingly reported by the media in this country. It was about, it's all kind of detailed stuff about food standards and labelling, and it's not really, it's about the fundamentals of the devolution process.
Yeah.
You know, it's about who gets to decide what changes are made to devolution, and Westminster unilaterally deciding for itself that it's going to impose these changes on Scotland, even though the Scottish Parliament, and it wasn't just the Scottish Government, the Scottish Parliament had overwhelmingly said, no, we don't agree to this.
Yeah.
But it was imposed upon us anyway. So devolution's meaningless in that context. You know, it's there are no constitutional guarantees for Scotland in devolution at all. You know, and it's shocking. It really is absolutely shocking.
Whereas under self-determination, everyone is working for Scotland.
Well, exactly. Under self-determination, it's, you know, Scotland is a sovereign nation. You know, Scotland is a country. Scotland is an independent state. Scotland is able to say, well, this is what we'll agree to and this is what we want, you know, and it can't be imposed upon Scotland. you know, Scotland can agree to have international treaties with other countries that can say, right, we will agree to pool our sovereignty. But fundamentally, that sovereignty always rests with Scotland, and Scotland can at any time say, well, no, we've changed our minds, we're going to take that bit back, you know, whatever, you know. But that's the difference.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference. At the moment, what we have in Scotland is on the sufferance of the Westminster Parliament. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard some people say that they're afraid that, you know, after Brexit, that the Tories might try and abolish the Scottish Parliament and stuff like that. I don't think they ever would, because there are many things, the Tories, but they're not stupid.
They're not stupid, and that would go down like a lead balloon throughout the world.
What they will try and do is to hollow it out from within.
Yeah.
That's what they'll try and do.
Yeah.
That's what they'll try and do. And that's what was interesting, I thought, about these proposals from Michael Gove. You know, when Michael Gove said, oh, but we would reserve a part of the Scottish budget and keep it for Westminster for spending on, you know, on devolved areas.
Yeah.
You know, on education or health or whatever. And we would make decisions, you know, to increase the profile of the British government in Scotland. Now, that is trashing the devolution cell.
Correct.
Absolutely trashing it. You know, and they would unilaterally make decisions in Westminster about what part of the Scottish budget Scotland is going to be allowed to spend.
Because they're making it out as though it's a Tory spending new money. Oh, they're exactly. going to give £300 million for this, and there's £500 million for that. Oh, wait a minute, the Tory government.
The Tories will undermine devolution, without a shadow of a doubt. That's, of course, if they get back in at the next election, which...
Correct, that's going to be...
isn't looking very good for them at the moment. So I think the other thing that we can say is that the chances of a new general election aren't looking so good right now. I think the Tories will definitely not want that at the moment, because
they know
they're facing wipeout.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, once they do have this new leader is going to lack democratic legitimacy. And, you know, there will be the question of, well, can you, as this new party leader, take Britain to a no-deal Brexit when you don't have a democratic mandate to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the House of Commons, a sufficient number of backbench Conservatives, and it doesn't take that many of them because they're already a minority legislation, might bring the government down.
Yeah.
So it's God knows where we are at the moment, really.
Right.
It's that security and stability of the United Kingdom. It's working out so well.
Super. Thanks very much indeed, Paul. Great to get your feedback on the EU election results. And we'll look forward to the next podcast with you.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having me. And the dog.
Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Library.